My employees just got iPhone 12 on Verizon 5G, the 5G business has been waiting for. We download huge files on the go and use multicam video conferencing. Plus, with the coverage of 5G nationwide and more cities, ultra-wideband, it's 5G from the network businesses rely on.
Get iPhone 12 Pro Max for your business with our best offer yet. 5G nationwide. Available in over 1,800 cities. Terms apply. Limited time offer.
This is your tech news briefing for Tuesday, December 22nd. I'm Amanda Llewellyn for The Wall Street Journal. What do Tesla CEO Elon Musk, Oracle, and Hewlett-Packard have in common? All three, plus some venture capitalists and a handful of other fixtures of the tech industry, have moved to Texas this year. And they're not the only ones leaving the Bay Area. On today's episode, our reporter Elliot Brown will explain how the pandemic has helped loosen Silicon Valley's hold on tech and what that could mean for the region and the rest of the country. That's after these headlines. Shares of Tesla slumped about 6.5% after its debut in the S&P 500 yesterday, suggesting that some investors were cashing out of the electric vehicle maker. The slide coincided with broader stock index declines tied to a new coronavirus strain spreading in the United Kingdom. For Tesla investors, it's a small dent in what's otherwise been a blockbuster year of gains. Shares of the company are up nearly 700% this year. By the way, we talked more about the significance of Tesla's addition to the S&P on yesterday's show, so be sure to cue that episode up next. We're learning more about the scope of the SolarWinds hack that compromised U.S. government agencies and major businesses. A Wall Street Journal analysis has found that the suspected Russian hackers also gained access to major tech companies, including the chipmakers Intel and NVIDIA, as well as California Department of State hospitals and Kent State University. It's not yet clear what, if anything, the hackers did inside the various organizations, but investigators and security experts say they may have sought things like internal communications, government secrets, and information about technologies still in development. Meanwhile, SolarWinds says it's traced activity from the hackers back to at least October of 2019, which is earlier than previously reported, and that it's now working with security companies, law enforcement, and intelligence agencies to investigate. Russia has denied responsibility for the attack. All right, coming up after the break, how some recent high-profile departures from the Bay Area could impact tech. That's next.
My employees just got iPhone 12 on Verizon 5G, the 5G business has been waiting for. We download huge files on the go and use multicam video conferencing. Plus, with the coverage of 5G nationwide and more cities, ultra-wideband, it's 5G from the network businesses rely on.
Get iPhone 12 Pro Max for your business with our best offer yet. 5G nationwide. Available in over 1,800 cities. Terms apply. Limited time offer.
Oracle, Hewlett-Packard, venture capitalists, a growing number of big players in Silicon Valley have been packing up their operations and taking them out of state. And while the pandemic has accelerated the trend, it's not the only driver. Some residents of the Bay Area have been disillusioned with the region for a number of reasons, which we'll talk more about with our tech reporter, Elliot Brown, who joins me now from San Francisco. Hey, Elliot, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So Silicon Valley has for decades been the de facto tech headquarters of the U.S. What kind of effects, positive and negative, has that had on the region?
Yeah, so it's really, it's for decades been the hub of tech, but then really over the past 15 years, it's totally been bursting at the seams where these once large companies have become really ginormous. And so, you know, Google and Facebook add like tens of thousands of jobs. And that's made the region really economically vibrant and made a lot more private jet trips to the region, a lot more flights to New York. It's also made for a huge amount of growing pains where the region has not been adding anywhere near enough housing to keep up with the demand. And so you have a lot of spillover effects from that.
And talk more about that. It sounds like housing has been one of the really big issues for the Bay.
Yeah, so a lot of the reason that the costs of living here are so high is because housing costs are so high. And the basic reason that's happening is because you're adding a ton of really high paying jobs and you are not adding nearly as many units. And so this is a thing in boom towns all the time. You see this in North Dakota where you get Manhattan apartment style rents. Here, you have a number of restrictive housing policies that make it harder to build. And so we've added Between 2005 and 2019, the region added 674,000 jobs, and just there were permits for 211,000 units. So it's basically three jobs for every one unit, and you really want something closer to 1 to 1 or 1.5 to 1. And so it's like, where are all those people living? And it actually forces a lot of people to sort of double up and have really dense housing. I mean, these are the poorer people. That is basically what's driving everything, is at the root of everything, is that you have just a ton of people wanting to be here and working here and not enough places to house them. And so that leads to a spike in prices.
Got it. And so a growing number of companies have been leaving the area. And it sounds like you're saying that it's not just the result of this new remote reality we find ourselves in because of the pandemic.
Yeah, I think what's happening is we're seeing, largely sort of sparked or hurried along by the pandemic, we're seeing essentially people reacting to the growing pains that have been happening here. So it's not a huge number of people, but it is a number of prominent people and companies. So there's a number of kind of loud venture capitalists that have moved to low tax states and been sort of defiant about it. But they also are like the problems they cite are housing costs in the region, the sort of quality of life issues where homelessness has really gotten crazy. I should say, like, one of the other things that's fueling the loud departures is, particularly of some venture capitalists, is politics. So, I mean, Silicon Valley used to be more libertarian. And I think what's happened is things have gotten more polarized everywhere. And this place has become that much more liberal. And so a lot of the people here feel really alienated by the local policies. And so, and the state income tax, which is like 13% versus zero in Texas. So they are, you know, moving to greener pastures in that sense.
But still, the pandemic must be playing a role here, right? We've seen this trend of companies announcing more flexible remote work policies. And, you know, if workers can work from anywhere, why not put your headquarters in, you know, a less expensive state?
Yes, totally. So I think what's happened in the pandemic, and the reason that the pandemic has sort of hurried along this trend of people no longer being able to fit here, is that people are more aware of the ease with which you can work from elsewhere. I mean, it's just sort of shaken our notion of just where we work and how we work. And for a company like Dropbox, which leased a huge new headquarters here a few years ago, now they're suddenly saying, you don't really have to come to the office anymore. It's going to be more collaborative for when you do come in. You aren't going to have an assigned seat and you can work from home. You can live elsewhere. We'll fly you in. Also, our CEO bought a house in Austin. So it's becoming a lot more fluid. And then that gives companies the idea of like, well, why be based here? Why don't we be based somewhere else where it's a lot lower cost and we don't have to spend $1 trillion hiring every new software engineer we get?
So I guess the big question is, what kind of impact could those departures have on Silicon Valley? Could the loss of tax revenue and employees sending their money locally have an impact on the area's bottom line?
You know, there is debate on this and we don't know, but it's hard to see any evidence that this is anything other than too much demand in the Bay Area. You know, this happens in New York all the time, which is that banks get tired of paying high salaries for mid-level employees. So they open a new center in Utah or in Columbus, you know, or UBS moves its trading floor to Stamford because it's cheaper. And people may worry that New York is dying, but like, guess what? It's still the financial capital. It's still growing. Its economy still grows. So it is possible that the pandemic will be the beginning of the end for San Francisco. But for me, the problem here is too much demand. And that usually doesn't kill a city, right? It just is sort of spilling over. And so, you know, some of that froth is moving to Austin. And, you know, like Austin could end up in 40 years a bigger tech hub, but that doesn't mean that San Francisco is going to turn into Detroit.
Sure. And not to mention, over the last few decades, the industry has built up an entire infrastructure of companies, talent, investors, et cetera, that would be pretty hard to undo overnight. So I guess the question is, with all that in mind, should we be calling it a Texodus? It sounds like your answer is maybe a no.
We should, because it sounds good. No, I don't. I mean, it could end up that way, but like, we really don't know what the vast majority of companies are going to be doing when we get back to the office. Everyone is sort of talking about how things are going to be different, but how that actually translates into whether a company is going to move you know, 300,000 square feet of office space from here to Texas, or just get rid of 300,000 square feet of office space, is a really sort of concrete, difficult decision that, like, you know, companies will have to make. For instance, if you say, well, everyone wants to be more flexible, so people are going to come in 3 days a week instead of five. But if everyone comes in on the same 3 days a week, you need the same amount of office space. And, you know, if you say you don't need to come into the headquarters as much and people move to Austin, you know, do you have an Austin office there that you add to? So, I mean, there's like, just in terms of physical space, there's a lot of questions about what's actually going to happen. And then, you know, a lot of people say things on a survey, but then it turns out that actually it's difficult to do remote work when half the people are working in the office and the other half are little icons on your screen. I think everyone agrees it's going to be different and less office intense than before. But my point is just, it's really hard for us to say how different until things come back to normal.
All right. Our reporter, Elliot Brown, thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
That's it for today's tech news briefing. You can find more tech stories on our website, wsj.com. And if you like our show, please do rate and review us in your app store. It really does help. I'm Amanda Llewellyn for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.